Support for this episode of the podcast comes from our patrons at Patreon. Go to patreon.com/chasingearhart to join the chase and become a patron today. On the morning of July 2nd, 1937, Amelia Earhart and her navigator Fred Noonan disappeared over the Pacific Ocean without a trace. 81 years later, all over the world lie scattered pieces of their puzzle, waiting to be put together. Welcome to Season 2 of the Chasing Earhart Podcast.
Death for 10 days. I was on a training bike ride with my fellow teammates, headed for the 1988 Winter Olympics in Calgary. As we made our way up to the beautiful Blue Mountains west of Sydney, it was the perfect autumn day. We'd been on our bikes for around 5.5 hours when we got to the part of the ride that I loved, and that was the hills, because I loved the hills. I looked up to see the sun shining in my face, and then everything went black. Where was I? What was happening? My body was consumed by pain. I'd been hit by a speeding truck with only 10 minutes to go on the bike ride. I was airlifted from the scene of the accident. I'd broken my neck and my back in 6 places. My whole right side was ripped open and filled with gravel. My head was cut open across the front, lifted back, exposing the skull underneath. I had head injuries, I had internal injuries, and I had massive blood loss. For 10 days, I drifted between two dimensions. I was in the fight of my life. After 10 days, I made the choice to return to my body. And when I did, the massive internal bleeding miraculously stopped. The next question was whether I would walk again, because I was paralyzed from the waist down. I was in a wheelchair, a plaster body cast, attached to a catheter bottle. I had no feeling from the waist down. I wanted my life back. I wanted to put my running shoes on and run out the door. But I couldn't. And I got depressed. And there were days when I didn't want to get out of bed and days when I didn't get out of bed. And I can remember my mum sitting on the bed and we were both crying. And she said, "I wonder if life will ever be good again." And I thought, how could it? Because I've lost everything that I valued. At home, sitting outside in my plaster body cast, an aeroplane flew over my house. And in that moment, my eyes and my mind were open. I stopped asking, why me? And I began to ask, why not me? And I looked up and I thought, well, that's it. If I can't walk, then I might as well fly. So weeks later, my mom and my friend Chris, they bought me a pair of baggy overalls and they drove me to the local airport, Bankstown Airport, and they carried me in. And I held onto the counter because I couldn't even stand on my own. I said, I'm here for my flying lesson.
According to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, the definition of a legacy is, quote, something transmitted by or received from an ancestor or predecessor or from the past. Tonight's episode will be emotional. It will be powerful. It will be the definition of what a legacy means. It's hard for me to pick a starting point because where do you start when it comes to my guest tonight? If you know me, you'll know that I'm a big believer in the power of destiny and the power of hope. I believe that there is a path and a plan for all of us, and my guest tonight is a living, breathing example of that and a living, breathing example of what Amelia Earhart stood for so many years ago. She's a dream guest for me personally. She's the definition of true inspiration for countless people around the world, and tonight she's officially a project guest for Chasing Earhart. Janine Shepherd, welcome. This is truly, truly an honor.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm just thrilled to be chatting with you, Chris.
So let's start the same way we start with every conversation we've ever had on this show. But with you, we're gonna use this question sort of as a jumping off for the majority of the conversation tonight. Can you tell everyone listening, for those who may not know, a little about your education, your professional background?
My education, my formal education, is that I have a degree in sports science, and I was with the vision at that time, of course, of being an exercise physiologist. So as an athlete, that was my dream job, probably because, you know, it allowed me to really focus on getting the most out of my body physically, because my goal was to go to the Olympics. So that's my formal education.
Now, of course, we're going to talk about parallels between yourself and Amelia a few times tonight when it comes to tenacity and never giving up. But I want to ask you, just because I ask this question for everybody, and we always find it's just an interesting answer. Do you ever, do you have any early recollections of Amelia Earhart growing up? Do you remember the first time you heard about her, like when you were younger or anything like that?
I've been thinking about this as we've been leading up to our chat tonight. And I think it's just one of those, you know, stories that is just in the sort of collective psyche, you know. So, you know, they're the sort of stories that are just sort of swirling around. I can't really put a finger on when I would have first heard about her. But being a tomboy myself, her life really resonates with me. And I feel that there's a great parallel between the sort of person she was and who I am.
I have so many questions for you. I really had to keep myself in check when it came to writing this interview tonight. But here's what I want to do. I wonder if we can go back, because I watched your TED Talk and you talk about this so eloquently, but I wonder if we can go back to the autumn day where you were training on a bike ride with your teammates, preparing for the Winter Olympics. You know, we've talked about this throughout the project so with so many guests. We've talked about destiny a lot in this project. And I struggle with how to ask you this question, but the universe tends to move people, places, and things into our path in order to align us with what we were meant to do. And, you know, sometimes that takes a tragic turn. But I wanted to ask you, ever since I watched the first TED Talk, do you think that your path up to this point, including the lows, is all sort of part of a path that you were meant to go down?
That's such an interesting question. And it's also a question I don't get asked a lot. You know, I do a lot of interviews and people always talk about the things that happen, but not the reasons behind them. And I have to tell you that when I had my accident, you know, I was really obsessed with why, you know, the why of the accident. And I've really come to the point in my life where I believe that it, you know, the best way forward is to not really worry about the why. I think that it was my destiny. It was always going to happen in some way, shape, or form. So for me, the positive and most powerful way to move forward is to say, okay, well, you know, that happened. So how do I go forward from this point on? Because I do have a great belief in destiny. It's something that I do a lot of reading about, a lot of contemplation about. You know, we can sort of turn ourselves into knots trying to figure out why we did something in the past, or particularly with relationships. You know, I was in a marriage that broke down. Why? You know, it was so happy. Why did that happen? And it was always meant to happen. You know, those big things that happen in our life, the people that come into our lives that have a profound effect on us, it's our destiny. I really, truly believe that. Don't, you know, turn yourself into knots and guilt and, you know, trying to sort of work out why it happened. Just say, okay, it happened. What have I learned from this? How can I move forward? And what can I give back to the world?
You know, when you're, again, this is from your TED Talk, but you talked about this there, but when you're in the hospital and your doctor is telling you that, you know, you're going to have to rethink everything because you're not going to be able to ever do what you did before, what goes through your mind? Do you remember the very first thought?
Well, it's, you know, I just don't like being told I'll never do anything. So very much like Amelia too, I think, you know, that, okay, I'll show them. And I did. And I'll just say that there are three really major seminal moments in my life that have sort of shaped my destiny. And the accident was obviously one that people know very well. The second really big one was the breakdown of my marriage. And the third one was losing my home. So they've all sort of pushed me out of my comfort zone in a major way and sort of put me on this path. I'm a real believer in the hero's journey. I'm a great fan of the work of Joseph Campbell. So, you know, I truly believe that we're all on this hero's journey. And, you know, just when we start to get a little too comfortable, life is going to shake us up. It's just the way it's meant to be.
You know, you talk in a lot of your lectures, you talk about going through depression and kind of that whole process. And I myself went through it when I had my heart surgery. I went through depression for a long time. And we have a lot of young folks that need to hear this from someone of your stature. Can you talk about overcoming those types of feelings and what that process was like working through that for you?
Well, I think we all, you know, at some point in our lives suffer depression. And you know, let's not say there's so many different types. You know, there's situational, some people, you know, like we're energetic beings, you know, we're full of chemistry. So, you know, for some people, and I know I'm a real advocate of, you know, people say that we're over-medicated, and I say, well, every person should be taken on the value of where they are in their own situation. So I'm a believer of whatever floats the boat. You know, if you're someone who has been to the doctor and you suffer from depression and you need medication, fine. You know, you need to, it's like trying to run a car on no fuel, you know. So there have been times, I mean, I got home from hospital and suffered major depression. And obviously being in a wheelchair and a plaster body cast and learning to use a catheter and have a body, you know, that I couldn't feel and having a permanent disability, you know, it's no wonder. And I always say that, you know, I got to my first rock bottom at that point, home from hospital. And I always say that, you know, there's a real gift in that, because when life is easy, when life is great and we're, you know, traveling along, you know, we sort of live this sort of superficial life. You know, we're on the surface. We never really have to dive deep. We never have to really ask those hard questions. You know, who am I? You know, what am I doing here? What's my purpose in life? Those really deep questions. When life is easy, you don't have to ask those. When you're at rock bottom, you know, you have to ask those questions. And I always say there's such a gift in that, because it doesn't just show you who you are, it shows you who you're not. And I realized that my entire life I'd been focused on my body. My body was the way I presented myself to the world. And suddenly I'd lost that thing that defined me. And I realized then, which is the, you know, the title of the original title of my TED talk was, I'm not my body, or you're not your body. So I realized that who I was unchanged at the essence. Who I really was unchanged. So I think for anyone going through depression, you know, it's tough. But, you know, lean into it and really look deeply into the questions that will give you the answers to the rest of your life.
Yeah, my dad used to tell me that when I was little. I never understood that, but people say when things start breaking up in their lives, it's not really a breakup, it can also be a breakthrough. And I think that's pretty incredible to hear someone like you speak about that, because it needs to be echoed. I think that's important, that depression's not the end.
Oh, absolutely. That's true. And you know that old saying, you know, you have to sometimes break down before you break through. And for me, I've had, you know, major experiences of that. And it gets easier, you know, if I ever go through one of those situations, I always tell myself, you've been here before. I'm so familiar with it. I mean, I live with chronic pain, and, you know, I've found ways to manage that as well. I live with disability, and I've managed to live through that. But I think I'm really comfortable with being uncomfortable. I'm really comfortable with uncertainty. So it becomes familiar, and you know there's actually nothing to be afraid of. And I love the work also of Pema Chodron, who says that, you know, when you get closer to the truth, you know, life can be extremely painful. And I think the truth is that this is not who we are. This body, this incarnation is not who we are. You know, we're spiritual beings having a human experience. And I think when you come to terms with that, it just makes the journey much more enjoyable.
You know, it's you talk about seeing an airplane fly over your house, and I feel like something just hit you and a switch turned on. And that's the first parallel we're going to talk about tonight. Much like the first time that Amelia Earhart went up in an air, she had no interest in aviation or airplanes before that moment, but she goes up in an airplane and something just turned on inside of her, and she knew she had to fly. It was just an instantaneous thing. And your quote, of course, was, "If I can't walk, I might as well fly." And I have no words really for how amazing that and how emotional it gets me to even repeat that sentence, let alone feel that feeling when the switch flipped. My question is, now kind of looking back on it, why flying? Why aviation?
I've thought about that a lot. And I say, people ask me all the time, why flying? And, you know, how did you fly? How did you choose to fly? And I really believe that flying chose me. And that's what life does. You know, we're sort of on this, you know, treasure hunt, you know, and it's giving us clues and dropping breadcrumbs on the ground along the way. And for me, it was, you know, flying. I had to do something that was remarkable, something that was, you know, this great sort of, the ultimate competition is life itself. And for me, flying was just extraordinary. It was a thing that you weren't meant to do. I mean, for Amelia, she wasn't meant to do it. She was a woman back in those days. Women weren't meant to fly. You know, you had a family and kids and that was it. And for me, you know, you didn't get out of a spinal ward in a wheelchair and go, okay, well, I'm going to learn to fly. So it was something that was extraordinary. And for me, it gave me my life back. It gave me a reason to get out of bed every morning.
You think the universe was just speaking to you at that moment?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm very good at keeping my ears and my eyes open to, you know, what are the clues? Which way am I meant to go? Life is doing that all the time. You know, turn left, turn right, pick me, do this, you know. And some people go through life asleep and they miss these incredible clues as to what we're meant to be doing with our lives.
You have so many phenomenal quotes. And I thought that what we do for the next few questions is just sort of discuss these quotes one by one and talk about, you know, what they mean to you personally, because they're incredibly powerful. And so I'll list them one by one and we'll go down the line a bit. Let's start with a great one. And I love this. And a lot of these are from your TED Talks, but the quote is, "It wasn't until I let go of who I thought I was that I had the freedom to create something completely new for myself." Can you talk about that statement?
Yeah, that's, you know, we tend to hold on to this idea of how we think our lives are meant to be. And, you know, as I said, life is tapping us on the shoulder saying, but hey, hold on, you're meant to be going this way. And if we hold on to how we think our lives are supposed to look, you know, we miss out on all of the incredible opportunities and possibilities that are waiting for us. And for me, I had to get to the point of letting go of my life as an athlete before I could even see the possibility of learning to fly. And so once you let go, I think I believe truly that life is about letting go continually. It's about letting go of, you know, the little things, then the big things, because ultimately, you know, the greatest letting go is when we die and we let go of our bodies. So if we hold on too tightly, we suffer. If we hold on to the idea of how we think our lives are meant to look, we miss out.
Oh, that's so true. The next quote is my favorite one, probably, that you've said. When you choose courage in the face of fear, you defy the things that hold you back from greatness. I've read that quote probably 1,000 times. I kid you not. And I just keep thinking of, I mean, the quote almost means something to me differently every time I read it. It's a pretty remarkable thing to say. And I wonder what that quote means to you, and kind of personally, and just kind of if you can kind of talk to our younger people, that we have a lot of people that are 14, 15 years old that listen to the show. Maybe talk to them and just tell them what that means to you, because there a lot of people are afraid.
You know, it's funny, people say to me all the time, you know, I remember someone mentioned to me once, commented, but it's okay for you because you don't feel fear. And I was like, oh, are you kidding? I feel fear all the time, but I'm not afraid of it because I've felt it so often. You get, as I said, you get sort of comfortable and familiar with it. But, you know, I think it's the great Maya Angelou who said that courage is the greatest virtue, because, you know, it takes courage to live every day, not just the big things, but the small things, even picking up the phone and applying for a job, or going up to meet, you know, introduce yourself to new people, or whatever it is, all the little things, they take enormous courage. And I have to agree with her. I think that courage is the greatest virtue. It takes courage to speak up. It takes courage to be seen. You know, I think that every moment that we choose courage in the face of fear, we're stepping into our greatness, you know, who we can be, the potential of who we can be. And you have to start with the small things.
You know, it's interesting. You just mentioned something about you know, people saying, oh, you must not have any fear. And you kind of correcting them and saying, no, I'm fearful all the time. And it brings me back to last season. We had Candace Fleming on the show. She wrote a book called Amelia Lost. And we were talking about Amelia Earhart's sort of conquering fear. I asked her, did she conquer fear? And she said, well, no, I think Amelia just sort of felt the most comfortable in the time of fear. I think she kind of lived in that and just kind of was able to kind of adapt herself and make herself feel comfortable when most people freak out when it comes to fear. And I think that sort of thing sort of is maybe mastering fear as much as you can master it, I guess.
Courage is not the absence of fear, but the mastery of it. And I love that quote, because you never know how courageous you can be if you didn't feel fear, right? So you have to feel fear. It's part of life. And I think the key is to lean into it. And what we find is that the thing that we feared wasn't really as big or as, you know, ominous as we once thought it would be. So it's really just being comfortable with that feeling. And I felt fear so often in my life that it's like I'm intimate with it. And I think Amelia Earhart was probably exactly the same.
Yeah, cut from the same cloth, I think. You say something that's really great too. We often define ourselves by things that are outside of us. That is such a great quote, because, and you touched on it earlier in the conversation tonight, but you talked about, you know, being an athlete and defining yourself by your body, and then all of a sudden just having that taken from you, and now you can't define yourself by that anymore. Can you talk a little bit more about just kind of, you know, how you can not define yourself by everything that's just you, or that's outside of you, rather? You know, how can you define yourself better?
Well, I always say that life is about rearranging the internals, not the externals. It's very hard in our world that's very materialistic. You know, we're judged by, you know, the things, for the young people that are listening, by the marks we get at school, by the car we drive, the house we live in, the relationship we have, the jobs that we secure. And if we, and that's fine because, you know, we are goal-seeking beings, so we need to be out there and achieving, and that's fabulous. But the moment we attach those things and we think that that's who we are, we're on a slippery slope because we can lose any of those things in an instant, as I did. And, you know, so I always say it's about loosening your grip, just holding onto those things lightly and knowing that at any moment things can change. And when they do, and we do lose those things, you know, it's an opportunity to have a clean slate and to look somewhere else and say, okay, now what? It's one of the most powerful things you can ask yourself, now what? And to me, the best way to sort of really understand who we are is to be really comfortable with those moments of silence, you know, really sitting and contemplating and spending time in silence and with ourselves. And I always find that when I'm lost for a direction or an answer, that's the best way. The universe just has this magical way of sort of popping the answer right down, you know, downloading. And I love that.
You know, I was watching, when I was doing research for this interview, I think it was last week, I was watching, just going through YouTube and watching a lot of videos, not only your talks, but just stuff where you've been on the news and where they've done stories on you. And there was a story that someone did on you a while back. It was a much older one, but you were actually back on skis again. You were in the snow and you're kind of going through skis. And I was watching that. I was listening to you talk, and I kept thinking about this, and I wanted to ask you, like, when you step foot in the snow again, and you're on skis, was there ever a moment where you thought, I want to go back? Like, let's try skiing. Like, let's try to resume where, basically resume where my life stopped momentarily.
Well, the crazy thing is, so that video you would have seen was for 60 minutes, and they just put me on some skis and I sort of shuffled along. But when I got, after my accident, when I got home, I really thought, oh no, of course I'm going to the Olympics. I put cross country skis on and they're very thin for anyone that knows. I could barely stand on my own by the time I got there, let alone ski on these little tiny sticks. So I fell over so much. I broke expensive poles. I got a black eye because I put a pole in my face. I was covered in bruises. The only way I could actually go out was I had to pad my ski clothes with a whole lot of tea towels because it was just so sore, covered black and blue. And I tried and I tried. I would get to a slope with little ski tracks in them and I'd sort of tuck and I'd end up just broken and bruised, and I realized, Janine, I think you need to do something else. So I tried again. That was, I guess I held on too tightly, and it was, letting go was incredible. It was incredible in so many ways, because all of my friends were my ski friends, my athletic friends, so I really had to let go of that too. But what I found was something so much greater. And, I feel that I'm so scarred, and there's that wonderful saying that, the light enters where the cracks are. And I feel that to me, when you let go and when you trust in life, you're given something much, much greater.
You know, and speaking of that, I wonder if, because we know people, I always ask, when we have Earhart experts on and things, I always ask if they feel that Amelia Earhart ever questioned her own path. Like, did she ever question? Did she ever have enough self-doubt where she questioned if she was going down the right path or not? I wonder, has that ever happened to you along this journey?
I think it happens to everyone. I think it's part of the human experience. I think we all question. And there's nothing wrong with that. As I said, that's part of the journey. And I think that's also how we tap into courage, to question, to move forward, And there are times when, a great skill is the skill of discernment, to really ask, well, which way should I go? And for me, anyway, what works best is to sit in silence, whether you call it meditation or prayer or silence. And I always get the answer, I always get the answer that I need. And to me also, I think that you don't always get what you want in life, but you certainly do get what you need. And, and that's part of the whole process. It's part of this whole journey.
Not only a great song, but a very great, very powerful truth.
Absolutely. For all of us.
Absolutely. So a broken body isn't a broken person. And that's been seen by millions of people all over the world. And just in reflecting on that, did you ever think that your story and your journey would pull so many people along with you?
Oh, gosh, no. When I wrote my first book in Australia, so my latest book, Defiant, which I wrote for the world, really tells the whole story. But when I wrote my first book way back after my accident, I remember thinking, I wonder if anyone will ever read this. And, I had no idea that it would touch so many people. And And I think that's really part of my healing, and one of the great insights I've had is that, you know, this wasn't my journey, it was this collective human journey. And, you know, people started writing to me and telling me their stories, and, you know, that became a great part of my healing, because I realized, you know, I'm not alone. I'm not alone. There's so many other people going through this. And that's why I'm such an advocate of sharing our stories, because in the sharing of our stories, you know, we're tapping into this sort of collective psyche and realizing that we're not alone. And then you see, you know, other people that have been through what you've been through, and there's a tremendous amount of hope that comes from that. So no, I had no idea, and it's really been part of my dharma, part of my path, you know, to be able to reach out to people and share.
I just have to ask, because, you know, and again, watching the talk, of all the stories that you tell when you speak, the story you tell about going for your first flying lesson, it's funny and it's inspirational and it's beautiful. And I wonder if you could tell that to us now.
Oh, well, that was funny. I mean, you know, sort of months after my, you know, I got out of hospital, I was in a plaster body cast, you know, I was so thin, I was just a bag of bones, and being held up at the counter in the flying school, like, hi, I'm here to learn to fly. And I think that they thought this is completely crazy. And I was, you know, lifted into this aeroplane, and I'm sure the instructor, Andrew, thought I was a complete nut. And, of course, I had no feeling from the waist down. I couldn't use my legs. And, you know, he said, you know, do you want to have a go at taxiing the aircraft on the ground? And I couldn't. But I said, I can use my hands. And so he went, oh, okay. So I remember the first time, you know, he took off, and when we got over the training area, he let me take over the controls. And it was this incredible sense of freedom, because I don't think there's anything further away from lying paralyzed in a spinal ward than flying an aeroplane. It was just extraordinary. It was this extraordinary sense of joy, and oh my gosh, I'm gonna be a pilot. And of course, you know, I had no idea about passing a medical or any of those things. I just knew this is what I have to do, and it became my entire life. You know, I was in. When I had my accident, I was in my last year at university, and so that was paused, and of course I finished that many, many years later. But I went home, and suddenly I had a reason to get out of bed every morning, and it, you know, I became obsessed, just like I had been with sport. You know, I became obsessed with flying, and, you know, people find it extraordinary when I tell them that in just, you know, around 1 year after, you know, I got out of hospital, I had become a flying instructor with a, you know, commercial pilot's license. It was just every single day, every single moment of my life was about flying at that point.
How often do you fly now?
Not enough, because I'm so busy speaking and traveling. And, you know, I came over to America, one of the seminal moments, of course, when I lost my house again, just when I got really comfortable in Australia, that happened. And again, you know, I was listening carefully, and the universe said, okay, you've got to go to America. And again, I packed up what I had and moved over here, not knowing anyone. And, you know, it was completely crazy, and I was full of fear, but I did it anyway, because I knew that's my path and that's what I had to do. And so my goal is that one day I'll have my little Red Robin, my aerobatic aircraft, back again, and I'll be able to fly. And and I do, my partner now, he's also a pilot, and he an instructor. So, you know, we take an airplane out every now and then and shake out the cobwebs and have fun. So I keep my hand in, I keep my license current.
You know, one of the many reasons that we wanted you to come aboard as a project guest are the parallels and tenacity that you share with Amelia Earhart. Of course, we've talked about that a little bit tonight. Some people call it drive, some people call it stubbornness, but whatever it is, I want to ask you about your incredible tenacity. In her day, Amelia had to show an extreme amount of tenacity for even her right to fly and just to do things that men could do, and, you know, to show that she and all women really belonged in aviation wherever else they wanted to belong. Your tenacity, though, is sort of on a whole other spectrum, but it's on the same wavelength in the sense that you wanted to prove to yourself that you could fly. Can you talk about the importance of just having tenacity when it comes to achieving a goal that you set for yourself?
Well, that's a great word. And I there is a parallel with Amelia, because I used to ski. I used to train with guys all the time. You know, my thing was, if I can beat the boys, you know, I know that I'm at the top of my game. So, you know, I remember one of my friends said, the moment Janine beats me in a cross-country ski race, I'm going to hang up my skis. And I remember I was in a race in Australia, and I remember I passed my friend and I went, time to hang up your skis. So I, you know, I always kept up with the boys. I'd love to beat the boys, because I just felt that women are out there. We're powerful. We're strong. We can do this. So the word tenacity is great. I'm a great fan of other TED Talks. Angela Duckworth talks about grit, and I think that's a great word too, and I love her talk. And I call it the defiant human spirit. And I think it's something that we all have the potential to tap into. And that's what Amelia had. She had this defiant spirit. And the defiant spirit is saying, I'm not going to let life beat me. I'm going to go out and live fully and fearlessly. And it's about, you know, really getting out there and doing the things that ignite you. And if people don't feel like they want to jump out of bed and whatever it is they want to do, then maybe they're on the wrong path, you know. I mean, you don't have to, you know, literally, you know, jump out of bed every single day, but you have to feel inspired by the life, what you do. You have to feel that this is my dream. You know, I'm not living someone else's life. I'm not doing what someone else wants me to do. Parents, teachers, friends, whatever. This is, you know, you get this one life, so make it count. And to me, the defiant human spirit, which is the tenacity, is about saying yes. It's about saying yes to all of life. And what that means, I always say life is like the hokey pokey. You know, you can put your left foot in and your left foot out. What's the best part of that game, that kid's game?
Shaking.
It's the end when you put your whole body in and you shake it all about. And that's life. It's about being all in, saying yes to everything, the whole catastrophe. You can't just cherry pick. You can't say, I'm only going to take the good bits. You've got to take it all. That's being defiant.
Janine, I just have one final question before we wrap up the show tonight. Okay. What does, and you touched on it a little bit, but I'll have you expand a little bit more if you can. What does someone like Amelia Earhart mean to you personally, and why does she continue to connect with people all over the world 81 years after she disappeared over the Pacific Ocean?
I think she represents the defiant spirit. I think she represents boldness and courage and tenacity and grit and all of those incredible qualities. I think for women in particular, often we're taught that we're not meant to be defiant. You know, we're not meant to be fighters. You know, we're sort of the softer, you know, things are changing, obviously. I recently spoke in Reno earlier this year to the Women in Aviation Conference. Oh my gosh, it was incredible. It was one of the most inspiring conferences. I mean, I've been speaking for a long time. That's my job. I'm a speaker. I travel the world. But speaking to, you know, 1,000 women was incredible. And I have to tell you, I was sitting at this table and the lady next to me, I said, oh, so what do you do? She goes, I'm an astronaut. I was like, oh, okay, you win. It was incredible. All these incredibly inspiring women. And I saw that as, wow. I mean, Amelia Earhart's life has inspired generations and generations of young girls to believe that they can fly, they can do something different, they can follow their heart and their desire, and they can achieve this. And so I think that's the legacy that she's left the world, not just the world, but women in particular.
Janine, can you give everyone your website and tell us where we can follow your work online?
Yeah, absolutely. So my website is easy, JanineShepherd.com. I'm on Facebook, Janine Shepherd, motivational speaker, author, and on Instagram, Janine_Shepherd, and Twitter at Janine Shepherd. And yeah, I love keeping in contact with people. I love it when they let me know where they're going to be. I travel extensively. So for the rest of this year, I live in Wyoming, but I'll be over on the East Coast. I'll be in Florida, and I'll be up in Maine and New York and Atlanta. And the rest of the year, then I'm over on San Francisco and North Dakota and back to Australia. So all over the place. Give me a shout out, anybody. And I just love hearing from people.
Thank you so much for this. This has been a pleasure.
Oh, it's been my pleasure too. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Chasing Earhart podcast, part of our Legacy retrospective series. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Come back to ChasingEarhart.com each week for another new podcast. While at ChasingEarhart.com, visit our archives and our blog to hear all of our past episodes and interviews with guests such as Brad Meltzer, Tom Vinson, Candace Fleming, Jessica Cox, Abigail Harrison, and Shasta Ways. You can also hear interviews with representatives of all of the relevant hypotheses regarding the disappearance of Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan, such as Tom King, Dick Spink, Gary LaPook, Rick Gillespie, Andy Sherrill, and more. Also at our site, you can find hundreds more posts, project updates, and much more information regarding the life and disappearance of Amelia Earhart. The Chasing Earhart podcast is a show without any sponsors or ads. We rely on support from listeners like you to keep the Chasing Earhart project operating. You can donate to the show And as our thank you, receive bonus podcasts, merchandise, and advanced opportunities for Chasing Earhart events. Find a full list of available shows and rewards at patreon.com/chasingearhart. You can also follow the project on social media, where our team posts all of our shows, news, and project information. And that hashtag is @ChasingEarhart. The Chasing Earhart podcast is produced by Vanessa Williamson and edited by Tom Myers. Podcast music is provided by Dane Jarrus Schmidt, and narration is done by Forrest Burgess. The opinions on Chasing Earhart are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Chris Evan Films Incorporated. Chris Evan Films Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. All movie clips and audio used in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of historical education, and no infringement is intended. The Chasing Earhart podcast is an exclusive trademark of Chris Evan Films Incorporated and may not be used without the express written consent of Chris Evan Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. The Chasing Earhart podcast is a Chris Evan Films production. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.